see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about reality dating shows like The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Welcome to a post-Bachelorette finale bonus episode of Love to See It.
Now that Gabby and Rachel's joint season has limped to its inevitable conclusion, we finally get to like take a deep breath and talk about some off-screen chatter.
Yes, today we will be covering a lot of post-show goss and mid-show goss that we never got to. We'll be talking about Eric's blackface photos, Gabby's response to them, the show's lack of response to them. We'll be talking about more insights from Rachel on her breakup with Tino. We'll be talking about Tino's dad's podcast debut and Caitlin Bristow's savage commentary on our upcoming Bachelor, Zach.
Plus, we're going to get to finally preview Bachelor in Paradise season 8 because somehow it's like about to happen. I mean, wow, the franchise content treadmill truly never sleeps.
It doesn't stop. It's just exercising all the time. So let's start with a topic that we have been waiting to kind of address more in depth because we haven't done like a gossip episode since the news came out and we've been trying to keep the recaps more focused on what's on screen. So it's time to talk a little bit more about Eric's blackface photos, which surfaced toward the end of the season. As we did mention on the recaps, there was a yearbook photo from 2011 of Eric in high school wearing a full blackface costume that leaked shortly before the finale. And he posted an apology not long after on his Instagram, which left a lot to be desired. We'll get into that. It was a black square with the apology and the caption. His apology called his actions, quote, insensitive, but it did not use the word racist. We have mentioned this and we want to reiterate it here. This apology is not for non-Black people to accept. We saw a lot of
predictably
of what seemed to be white fans accepting the apology and thanking him for it in the comments. That's really not the place of, it's not our place to do. So we want to really try to avoid that. Okay. But we are going to try to talk about the apology itself, the critiques that have been made of it by Black people in and around the franchise who have, you know, very generously sought to educate the fan base about these issues in the franchise and just kind of like talk about Gabby's response, how the show has handled it, and where that all stands right now.
Yeah. We have been, as Clara said, like super grateful to the generosity of Black commentators and Black show alums who have spoken really publicly about this, including, you know, the Black Chillerettes. Highly recommend listening to their podcasts always, as well as Two Black Girls, One Rose. Like, these are really essential voices in the commentary community. Also, you know, Rachel Lindsay has spoken about this, and other alums like Thomas Jacobs, Ivan Hall, Damar Jackson. We are just really grateful to all of these people for even taking the time to address something that is just so obviously fucked up and racist.
Yeah. And like to say that like it's not our job to like accept the apology or to be like it's time to move on doesn't mean that like we should just be silent.
It's not our job to address it. Right.
Right. It is our job to address it. And I think that what we've actually seen has been kind of shocking to me is just how quickly it dropped out of the mainstream conversation. Like, I feel like it seemed to blow over almost in a way that I did not expect because it's so shocking. That doesn't mean that no one is still talking about it, but I feel like a lot of people were very eager to take the show's lead and be like, well, that's been dealt with and we're not really going to dig in.
Yeah, I guess from what I've seen, and maybe it's just like my bubble of specific Bachelor commentary and what I consume, it hasn't felt that way. But certainly the show has been leading the charge, and I think had sort of gave themselves a convenient out because there were all of these other sort of quote unquote scandalous conversations and controversies going on around both Tino and Eric. And they were like, well, we can skip this one, which was a really bad decision. I have personally been heartened to see that a lot of people haven't dropped this, including, you know, official channels and alums that are still very close with the show, including Caitlin Bristow, including Becca Kufrin and Michelle Young on the Bachelor-owned, you know, podcast property, Bachelor Happy Hour. And so and Thomas also posted on his Instagram story. So that at least I was glad to see that there are people still involved in the franchise that are actively countering the show's desire to just kind of sweep this under the rug and move it along.
Yeah. I think before we get into that a little bit more, I wanted to talk more about the apology and some of the critiques of it. I should just read it, the apology. It's not very long. He says, quote, "I wholeheartedly apologize for the insensitive photo of me in blackface from my high school yearbook that has been circulating. What I thought at the time was a representation of my love for Jimi Hendrix was nothing but ignorance. I was naive to the hurtful implications of my actions to the Black community and those closest to me, and will forever regret my offensive and damaging behavior. I am deeply ashamed of my actions or by my actions and understand that my apology is only the first step in taking accountability." So, you know, I think a lot of people were glad that there was a quick apology. I know that when Rachel Kirkconnell's photos came out of her at an antebellum party, the show didn't let her or asked her not to respond for quite some time, and it caused more harm. And at the same time, you know, I think Vic and Mai of the Black Chillerettes in their responses have really emphasized the importance of naming actions as racist when you're apologizing for them. And that's something that this very notably does not do. And they, I think, very eloquently point out, and I do encourage everyone to listen to their podcast about this, that accountability and ownership has to involve naming the specific harm. Because when you talk around it in this way, you are just protecting your own feelings, your own image. It's uncomfortable maybe for you to say, I was being racist. You don't want to bring that word into it. But then you're not really
naming the actual thing that occurred. Yeah. I think that a lot of white people, and I'm sure us included, feel a lot of discomfort around, you know, owning our own complicity in racism and our own racist actions. And I think that the reality of living in this society is that a lot of white people, whether or not, you know, you consider yourself to be a good liberal who is aware of these things and definitely not a racist, that doesn't mean that you haven't engaged in racist behavior. And when that is brought to light, the only thing to do is to name it and to own it. And I think that what we saw with Eric is that he let his discomfort kind of take primacy over naming those things.
And it's interesting because in other ways, it seems like he is using a lot of the buzzwords that maybe he like looked into what a good apology would be and was like, I need to talk about accountability and I need to talk about like harm. But there is a very fundamental piece that's missing. Ivan and Damar on their podcast, The Vibe, also had a conversation about this and made a point about the black box, which they both were just like, oh God, not the black box, you know, cringe.
That was my reaction too.
Revisiting that very embarrassing disturbing 2020 trend. Damar, I think, basically was like, he's hiding. Like, he should have put his face in front of the camera to address this, just like his face was on camera in that costume. And it's uncomfortable, but, like, if you can be on camera in that costume, you can be on camera admitting to it, naming what you did, and apologizing for it. And I thought that that was a good point. It's something we've heard brought up about, you know, previous issues like this, like with Hannah Brown.
Yeah, like with Hannah Brown. Mm-hmm. That's something Rachel Lindsay spoke about a lot around that. And I do think part of that conversation prompted Rachel Kirkconnell did ultimately make a video apology.
Yeah. So these are the things that that I think is important for, you know, for a lot of people watching like us to sort of take away and internalize.
And sit with.
Yeah, like the discourse around this can be educational. It's also very painful for a lot of people within the franchise. And so it's important to be, you know, sensitive and also listening. And the show, let's talk about how this went
show. That big sigh felt appropriate, Claire. I mean, we did address this during our recap of the finale, like our extreme disappointment and disgust with the fact that despite a 3-hour finale with so much unnecessary filler, and like, to be clear, even if it had been a 20-minute finale with no filler, this should have been addressed, but it felt particularly egregious that it was left out.
More obvious how hard they were desperately trying not to talk about it.
Exactly. I think a lot of people were watching with the expectation and the hope that it would be addressed. And
yeah, including several alums of the show who were there.
Right.
And who
I was very interested that Caitlin Bristow went on Instagram after the finale and on her stories, and she said directly that that their understanding, her, Becca, and Michelle, was that they were there in the audience in order to be a part of that particular discussion. And so their expectation was that this would be addressed, and she expressed her deep disappointment and frustration that it wasn't.
Yeah. I will say that I'm not sure why Caitlin would have been needed to be there for that necessarily. But like, yeah, I think that we saw in Becca's words when she did speak that she thought that they were there to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Because she really emphasized how they should sit down, Gabby and Eric, and make sure that they share the same morals and values.
Yeah, we felt that there was a lot more underneath that statement. And I think from what was said ultimately in Bachelor Happy Hour, which we will get into, we can confirm that there was a lot more underneath that.
A lot of people were waiting for this to be addressed. It wasn't explicitly addressed. It was only obliquely addressed by Becca in this one moment. And what ended up happening was that during her round of press with Rachel, Gabby was explicitly asked about these photos a couple times, or this photo. And on Bachelor Happy Hour, it actually was an extensive conversation. I think this is actually, because it is a franchise property, I find this to be, like, it's hard to tell how independent the content really is, right? It's like, did the show on some level say like, well, we just want that to be addressed on our official podcast with
Becca
we're
gonna
and Michelle.
Punt, we're going to punt that. To,
right. And not to say that I'm also we're that gonna, I'm not happy that they that discussed it, but.
Yeah. No, and I don't think any criticism is actually a critique of the hosts of the podcast, but I do think you're making a good point in that, like, are they sort of punting responsibility for this away from their actual primetime franchise?
Right.
To not only this side property, but to Becca and Michelle to take the lead on, and also for Gabby to be the one to answer for this stuff substantively on a press run in which Eric is not even there.
Right.
So you're like doubly punting it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Eric wasn't even there. They were having their hosts who are women and one of them a woman, a Black woman. So, and you know, we know they love to do that. They love to have like Rachel Lindsay addressing racism on her season while Chris Harrison keeps his hands out of it. They love to have to bring in Emmanuel Acho to deal with the end of Matt James's season. They don't want to, I guess, stick Jesse Palmer into that position. They want to punt it off the main show, out of his lap to Becca and Michelle. And then if people really want to hear about it, they can go seek it out. Just like if they really wanted to see that rose ceremony, they could go to abc.com. Like, it's just, God, it's Lord. Insulting.
Yes.
And so I was glad that they pressed Gabby on this at length, but Eric should have been there. And it should have been in front of the whole audience and not just the listeners of this podcast.
100% agree. I will say that, I was impressed with the way that Becca and Michelle handled this. And I was really glad to see that Becca did not punt responsibility for pressing Gabby on these issues or even speaking about why this photo was so upsetting to Michelle. And I do think that was a relief for me that Becca, as a white woman, really took the lead on being like, I'm gonna be the one to express how important and essential this conversation is.
Yeah. Becca is in such an interesting position because we did see a lot of her own growth in this regard on the air with, you know, talking about how her relationship with Garrett was falling apart and how she hadn't really fully addressed the issues that came to light when he was coming off the show.
I think something that we saw is that even a couple years ago, you know, conversations about race and racism within the franchise were really kind of punted to Rachel when the two of them were were hosting this podcast. And so I was glad to see that growth on Becca's part and her kind of stepping up and taking responsibility for being
Rachel
active.
Had to be that person holding Becca to account.
Her accountable. Mm-hmm. Right.
And then Rachel was like, anyway, I can't do this anymore.
She's like, no, thank you. Which, like, fucking fair enough.
Fair. Absolutely fair.
But yeah, so they did, both Michelle and Becca asked Gabby about the blackface photo. And Gabby says, you know, at first I was devastated. I had a pit in my stomach. I couldn't really believe it because I've worked hard to educate myself and become the woman I am today, which comes from wanting to push yourself, wanting to learn, taking it upon yourself to really grow. I know who I am, but I am with a man who did this. So then that's a reflection of me. It took me a long time to process, and Eric did write an apology, which is what he was supposed to do. At the very least.
At the very least.
Did appreciate that she added that.
Yeah.
She basically says, like, I'm still processing, but I did make the decision to be with him. So now this is something that I have a responsibility to speak about as well. I was interested that a lot of what she focused on was her role in teaching Eric.
Yeah.
And while I understand what she was saying, and I think what she was trying to communicate, like what I glean from it, is that she's like, I'm a person who finds like social justice issues to be important. And so it is on me to like impart that importance to my partner. But I also would have hoped that Eric had learned on his own in the last, yeah, what, 11 years,
well,
since,
I am
since
like,
this photo.
As I keep referencing, disturbed by some of the other social media hints that like he is not in such a different place, like the,
well, right,
the 2016 photo of he's tagged in with the MAGA hats and some questionable follows he had. Like, he doesn't, I'm concerned still that Gabby got through this entire process without asking him about his politics or his social views, and that I do think he comes across as not that kind of guy. And so maybe you think, you know, he comes off as so sensitive, and, you know, I think if you're Gabby too, you're like, well, I'm such like a strong, unconventional woman. He likes me. Like, I've fallen into that trap,
right,
before, where you're just like, oh, well, surely this guy that I like, who likes me, wouldn't,
yeah,
be that guy. You don't ask. And then, you know, you really have
to. They still can be. Right. You have to press. And I do think that this is where Becca's particular experience was really helpful in the conversation. And this is where she started to really press Gabby, which I appreciated. She says, you know, I was in a very similar situation. She never names Garrick. She keeps being like, the person, that
man,
person I chose, that man. I was laughing at that.
Yeah.
But she's like, you know, I was extremely taken aback when I essentially saw Garrett's really offensive likes. And she said she was thinking that she would give, quote, this person the space, time, and means to grow and change. But ultimately, in her situation, that didn't happen. And 2.5 years down the road, she learned firsthand that the words and actions weren't lining up. And so she asked Gabby, do you think Eric is in a place where he's genuinely open to changing or growing? Or, like, is he just saying this to appease the public?
Right.
And I thought that was a great question.
Yeah. To appease the public and maybe to appease her. That's like, this isn't,
right,
really going to affect our lives. If I just say the right things, then like this can be an issue
then
that
you,
we don't
then
have
maybe,
to deal with. And
right,
I can,
you
keep
can
this,
move on. The public will move on.
Everyone
and
will
move I, on. As a white man, will just get to like, you know,
yeah,
I did the thing.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was clearly a question that came from painful experience. And
yeah.
Gabby says, you know, I don't know. We're still in it, but
I was glad she said that
yeah,
she acknowledged, like, I can't fully vouch for him.
Like, yeah. I think she's really trying not to be defensive and to be like, well, I know the man he is. And he's like, you know, she's saying basically like, I will have to wait and the proof is in the pudding, but I think he's in a place where he wants to change. We talk about social issues so much because it's something that I hold very important. And even before this came out, he knew what my opinions were and that I was going to push him on these things and that it comes with the territory of being with me. And I do think it's good that those conversations,
yeah,
were starting to happen. It's something that Greg and I talked about a lot when we were first in a relationship. Like,
mm-hmm,
you want to make sure you're on the same page with those things. And if you're not on one thing, then you're like, well, let's really talk about why. And like, how,
right,
we can work.
I will
on
say
that
there's, you don't have to be 100%, you know, on the exact same page about every minutia of every issue, right? Like, there is always room for learning, growth, reaching a point of understanding. But you,
yeah,
do hope that on a large scale level, that like the values,
yeah. And I think you would hope that it's not, you know, she's in a position now where she's like, I'm his teacher. I think I learned a lot from Greg too, and from my previous
boyfriend.
Yes, you hope it's
an even exchange,
right? That you're, yeah, not like with someone who's just like, I don't understand empathy or why I should treat people well, and you have to like haul them up. You know, that's not,
yeah,
a good starting position. So, hopefully, those are actually good and productive conversations with someone who has moved past what we have seen from his past actions. But yeah, I think she's trying to be quite realistic. She's like, you know, it's hard that how's our society still dealing with this stuff, but it is, and there's so much work to do. And she says, like, if people look up to him as being a white man who's experienced privilege, but he admits his wrongs and wants to change and grow, maybe he can be a person that other people like him can learn from.
It's optimistic.
Yeah, I feel like I also always want to like shy away from being like, this white person can become a role model by... It's like the...
Yeah, I would certainly not have used the language of role model or looking up to. I think...
It is good to model in a accountability.
Right, exactly. In a generous reading, you know, I hope what she's trying to say is like, perhaps people around him who may have engaged in their own racist behavior can learn to self-reflect if they see someone that you know, they think is like them doing that work.
And like, he has this platform that is part of his work is to model accountability and growth. And does that make him someone who's like up on a pedestal? Maybe not, but maybe he can be another source of learning.
I was also glad that Becca didn't just sort of accept that at face value. And she did press Gabby again. And she's like, do you think that Eric is the type of person that will actually be having conversations about race and racism with his friends and with his family and with people in his community? And Gabby again is kind of like, I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah.
And she does, I think, which you picked up on, Claire, she says explicitly, like, what we're trying to do right now is simply come to every conversation without putting up any defenses.
Yeah.
And like, that's where we're at now.
Yeah. Michelle talks a little bit about her experience being a Black woman within this very, very white franchise and the way that these things just keep happening. She's like, we're here again. Yeah. We went through this with Matt's season. And she's like, you know, it's easy to say now that you're putting in the work, but after this all blows by, is he still going to be seeking out opportunities to learn? Is he still going to be putting that work in? And Gabby is like, yeah, that's important too. She's like, I felt the same way. I was talking to some people and they were like, well, it's kind of blown over. And I was like, that is a problem. That's not a good thing. And she's like, we shouldn't just be like waiting for this scandal to blow over. We should be talking about it. We should be seeking out learning. And I thought that was, I mean, the right thing to say. Like, I can understand why in her position she might just want it all to be over, but it's important to be able to say, like, we actually do need to talk about this and not sweep it under the rug.
Yeah. And I think Michelle made a good point where she's just like, you know, people, there is this tendency to be like, well, that was so long ago. Mm-hmm. And she's like, look, let's like be real about when this occurred. Like, yeah, it was, you know, 11 years ago, but Obama was the president when this happened.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, I could have plucked a first grader out of a class at my school and they would know.
Yeah.
That is not okay.
How does progress ever happen if you're always like, that was in the past? And so
it's very convenient.
It's like, in 11 it's years, like Chris, this will be 11 right. years in the
past.
Well,
it's like what the Chris Harrison conversation made so clear, right? Is like it's a very convenient model for white people who don't actually want to confront racism to just always be like, well, that was X amount of years ago. And it's like very conveniently, whatever amount of time it was, that's a long time
ago. The goalpost keeps shifting up to like whatever year we're in right now.
Right.
What I think like is really telling about the yearbook photo is not when it happened, but the fact that the school published it. I do think that is super revealing of the environment he was in.
Exactly.
The school administration published
it's
that.
It's extremely disturbing to me that certainly certainly Eric should have known that, and his parents should have known, and anyone around him should have known that is extremely fucked up behavior. It is another level and commentary on that environment that no one within that administration, no, the teacher on the year, like who was leading yearbook, like none of the, no one considered like what the implications and harm would be of featuring that in a school publication.
Like, we're talking about like
wildly
so
disturbing to me.
Like basically every adult surrounding Eric, like he failed, every adult surrounding him failed to prevent this from happening. And there wasn't even the recognition that it wouldn't be a good thing to memorialize in that yearbook. So That, to me, speaks to him coming from a place and a background that was really racist. I mean, that was right. Very white dominated and racist. And so I do think that more than the time period, that gives some like sense of his upbringing and where this came from. That's obviously not an excuse, but it does give some like context to just like how pervasive that was in his in his youth.
And I think that Nate Mitchell in his public comments did also call this out. Like, he made very clear, like, I'm not here to excuse this behavior, Eric, but like, he did point out on Instagram, like, the adults surrounding you and like your community really failed here. And that is a disturbing piece of this. And I do think relevant context.
Yeah. And that's kind of the end of the segment that they do. She was asked about it also on Chicks in the Office, but well, sort of like it was mentioned and she was like,
yeah, it was mentioned. Gabby showed up prepared, but like the host didn't really seem interested in pressing her, having a larger conversation. Yeah. Gabby was like, I mean, look, I'm showed up prepared to have this conversation, but I don't know that she even said anything.
Yeah.
Because like they weren't engaging with her. I don't think she really said anything that is worth adding to what was said on Happy Hour.
Yeah. I'm not shocked that Barstool Pod did not want to dig in on that.
Let's
say.
Weird.
But yeah, so that's mostly what we got for this week. I really, really hope to see Eric address this on the mic very soon, and either alone or with Gabby, but I want him to really have to address it and not kind of hide behind an Instagram post or Gabby.
Or behind a partner that is better informed than him, or a partner that is beloved. Like,
right. I really want to see him address it.
Like, he needs to own it. He needs to speak on it. And he also needs to show that he is taking actions beyond, you know, a fucking black box. Like, it's just, it's so beyond not enough. And yeah, I do want to give him the space to do that because the show certainly didn't have an interest in it. And I hope that he has an interest in carving out that space and using his platform. But
it's been an
only
interesting...
time will really tell.
The double bachelorette thing, I think, also gave the show an opportunity cover to be like, oh, instead of sending our happy couple to do GMA and, you know, Kelly and Ryan, we're sending our two bachelorettes, your favorite couple. And so they're doing all these media appearances that typically are done by the engaged couple, Rachel and Gabby are doing. And I do want to hear from Rachel and Gabby, but she is with Eric. They are engaged. He needs to be at some of these appearances, speaking to his shit. So I hope we can do that soon.
I hope we see that.
Yeah. I also like don't want to talk about the text anymore because I'm just like, enough. Like, do not waste your precious time with Eric grilling him about whether he dated someone for 2 months before and wasn't like, nice
to
her.
I don't care. I'm sorry.
Let's
just move on. Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see more on that soon. And I think we should talk about Rachel and Avon because we did hear a little bit more on Chicks in the Office.
Yeah, they did. Rachel did provide some insight on her own reflections about her relationship with Avon on the show and also Avon's feelings about that, like, deeply uncomfortable kind of crossing on the stage between him and Tino. So I thought that this was interesting, and Rachel, I think, said this also on Happy Hour, but how different it landed for her watching herself and Avon back on the show than it did in the moment, like specifically his concerns or ambivalence about proposal. And I thought that this made a lot of sense to me. You know, she says, watching myself back, it's insane how much you learn, because like watching, I could see exactly what he was saying to me. But at the time, I was like, he's just trying to get out of this.
And I can see why she felt that way. Yeah, I really don't. Yeah. It's almost like one of those things that, like, it's like hindsight is 20/20, sort of. You know what I mean? Like, she only knows what she knows about Avon from being in these scenes with him on the show. Even watching it back as a viewer, you're seeing more of Avon.
And of Tino.
And of Tino. Or at least you're seeing different things. You're seeing things she hasn't seen. Exactly. Yeah. So you are also seeing how Avon has been since the show and how Tino has been since the show. And so you look at Avon and you're like, he's trying to communicate with her. He's being so caring. He really does care about her. He is genuine. But I can definitely see, and I said this at the time, why in the moment, you're like, all I know is that he implied to me or said to me or what I thought said to me that he was ready to propose at the end of this. And then he's told my friend. And not even to me. It's like, he's like, did he panic when he's meeting my family? And he's like, this is too real. Like, did he start to waffle? Is he like, maybe I just need to say the thing that will get me cut so I don't have to go through with this? Like, these are all things that a bachelorette worries about because it does happen or it seems to happen. And it makes a lot of sense to me why she felt that way. And then because he handled himself so well in the argument, I think that for viewers, you're just like, why is she being such an unreasonable bitch? But like, she was coming into this with this really like strong concern. And just because he was explaining himself well didn't make her feel any less panicked at the basis.
She basically says like, I couldn't even really hear him because my walls had completely gone up because, like, my defenses had gone up because it was just felt so confusing to me and, like, so upsetting that he had, said this to her friend. And she was just like, there just wasn't space for me to interpret it any other way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like she and Avon have maybe talked some of this through in the recent weeks.
And she says, it's been compared to him coming on stage and like sort of asking her out has been compared to Hannah Brown and Tyler after her breakup with Jed. I think Hannah asked Tyler out. Am I misremembering that? Like, she kind of shot her shot with Tyler because I remember that was part of her like feminist queen thing was like, I'm going to be the one. Right. And then he was like, then they got papped together the next day. It was like a whole thing. This was a little different, obviously, because not only did Avon sort of do the asking, he also didn't really explicitly like make it a date thing. It was like, let's go somewhere and talk.
Right. And I think Rachel clarified this. She said, you know, Avon coming on stage last night really ultimately was just him showing his support for me. And anything that happens after this, it's going to be really organic and not rushed at all.
It it sounds like she's to me like they want a date, but in a chill way. She's not
not shutting the door, but I think she is also doing the smart thing of like taking the pressure off of them. She's not like, Avon came in and saved me and now, you know, I'm rushing into a relationship with him. She's like, Avon supported me. It wasn't explicitly romantic. Maybe there will be room for that, but like, we're like, calm down, everyone.
She has not succeeded at all. I'm more excited after this because that to me sounds more real and less like a PR stunt.
It does.
And that perversely makes it a better PR stunt that makes me more interested in their organic and not rushed relationship.
I mean, I really support it. You know, I love. I feel very like we were really denied a lot of good romance this season. Mm-hmm. And look,
And
if it happens, I'll be thrilled.
I do wonder if Avon and Tino were closer in contention than we thought. It's always hard because also I think that your perspective changes once your dream perfect guy has like cheated on you and you've dumped him. It's easy to look back and be like, I almost picked Avon. But that is sort of how she made it sound, like that didn't want him to leave.
Like, I think that, and we were talking about this in our recap, just the fact that Rachel maybe let herself really be swayed by, like, external signs of interest. And so I could see a world in which she kind of had these guys. Tino had the edge because he came in so strong. And she almost, like, hadn't completely checked in with herself and her actual desires. And she was just like, I have to make the right decision. And like, Tino is checking enough boxes to make him feel like the right decision. And Avon has now defied the one thing I really thought about him, which is that he was this like super safe, secure person who was like 100% ready. And I could see her completely like reevaluating that.
Oh, she is clearly reevaluated. Yeah. Absolutely. So she also speaks to the fact that Tino was just on stage looking like a kicked dog when Avon came out. And Rachel's like, yeah, he had no idea that Tino would be on stage for this. And he was not happy about it. Like, that's not how it was supposed to be.
Something that I mean, I'm sure the production did want it to be that way. But yeah.
No, I mean, it wasn't an accident.
Rachel and Avon didn't want it to be that way.
No. Like, they didn't send Tino away and he just sat there. They were just like, well, that wraps up our segment with Rachel and Tino. And what's this? Here's Avon. Without ever, like, dismissing Tino. That was that's one of those pieces of producing that it's like you don't have to squint at all to see it. That is the most obviously manipulated scenario.
Exactly. Something I do really appreciate about Rachel is that she, in all of these press appearances, seems really conscious of like protecting other people in her orbit and who are involved in all of this drama from the audience.
Except for Tino.
Except for Tino.
And we will get to that.
We will get to that. And yeah, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will get into the Rachel and Tino of it all and some other good news. Can you keep up? I like love it. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home. And constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate like what's the correct amount of social energy, what kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize, what space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge. Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/love to see it today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/love to see it. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes. There's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
Allomoves.com, code LTSI20. 1 in 5 Americans have learn a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI. And we're back. And it's time to talk about what Rachel said about Tino on Bachelor Happy Hour. And I was so thirsty for more details about this because both of their conversations were just as confusing as that like 9-hour overnight breakup conversation you had with your ex when you were 22 years old. And you just like the next day you're just like, what even happened?
Nothing except for the fact that we didn't understand what was happening. And luckily, we got a little bit more clarity on some of the specifics from Rachel.
Yeah, not like a ton, but definitely some more.
Not a ton, but like some, because we basically had none except like there was a kiss.
There was a kiss.
And there was a notebook. Like, that's what I got from those conversations.
Oh, that but sounds on Bachelor like it could Happy be so Hour, romantic. So on
not the romantic kind.
On Bachelor Happy Hour, Rachel talked about sort of how this all kind of unfolded a little bit more in the timeline, I think, and the details of what she learned a little bit more. And she does try to protect him a little bit, I will say. Like, she is saying, like, he's not completely at fault for the lack of communication we had. Both of us, you know, weren't giving 100. We weren't doing our absolute best in that regard. But she's like, I will say I never wavered from committing, working toward this every day. And it's hard when one person can break so easily at the first sign of a weakness in the relationship. And like, that is the thing is like, they had been engaged for like such a short amount of time. He's like, this will never go away. Like, you're it for me. I'm going to make you happy forever. The first time that they're having like some issues, he's just like, oh, fuck, I got to go like get another girl, I guess.
Right.
Like,
well, exactly.
That is, and that I think, is like on a whole different playing field than just being like, I'm not doing great at communicating right now.
Especially we all when you've committed to someone in this like very intense and overt way, and you knew at the time that like the show was going to air, that there was going to be this gap. Like, this is all known.
Yeah.
And you might not be able to understand how difficult it will be. But it's not like it was a surprise that there would be these kind of hurdles thrown at them, like distance, like having to, you know, Rachel having to do a bunch of press that Tina wasn't included in, like having to watch back the whole thing unfold. Like, this was not a surprise. I also, she did clarify again. She says, you know, Tino has his own story and he has the right to tell that. But like, she's like, from me, there was never a point when we were broken up. There was never a point where an engagement was called off. She said, did we have conversations saying we need to focus on dating and we really need to get to the core of like these issues? Yes. Which seems normal.
Yeah, I think that does, like, it's very weird to see it being framed as a, like, I just don't really understand how.
You have to be explicit about the fact that you broke up with someone. Like I just.
A rough patch is not a breakup. A week where you're not really talking is not a breakup. If you are engaged, especially. Like if you've been on three Tinder dates, yes, a week I'm not talking might be a breakup.
If you have a fiance and then you, you know, get in a fight and don't talk for a week, I would not assume that like we were broken up.
This is like full Love in the Villa situation. It's like we're engaged, we're not engaged. Who can keep track of these things? We don't speak to each other. Yeah. So she says basically we weren't broken up. He was upset that we were in a bad place. And instead of sitting there and doing the work like I did, he ran straight to someone that he was apparently not seeing, but seeing before the show. And not only that, keeping it from me for weeks. And so the timeline apparently is that the cheating happened around the premiere and she didn't find out until like around Men Tell All, which is.
It's a while.
It's
a long time. That's a month, I believe.
Yeah, like a month.
I think July. Well, I think July 11th to August 11th is actually
a month.
Yeah. And she and I think that they're when they filmed the breakup conversation, it was days after Men Tell All was filmed. Like she also clarified, which did change my perspective a little bit, that the conversation we saw them have was within like 24 hours of her finding out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So they'd had one phone call and then immediately, I guess, she like alerted production to this and they both agreed like we need to be in person. So that does make a little bit more sense to me. Like she was like, I thought that conversation was going to be him actually just like telling me all the details. And then like,
it is funny that she thinks he would do that. It is funny that she thinks he would do that on camera. I was like, Rachel, did you think that getting him together on camera was going to result in that? Or, I mean, I understand her perspective for sure, but that was not realistic because.
Oh yeah. And I understand why Tino, frankly, was not like, here is my exact timeline and all the, every minutia of the bad things I did.
No, it like, totally puts in context for me why he was like so sweaty and all over the place and why she was so emotional.
Right. It like made their it made their emotional states make more sense to me when I understood that it was really that tight of a turnaround.
And that they hadn't really fully had this. She was like, we had like started having this conversation. And then I was like, we should do it in person. I'm going to say, I know that production wants to film all this stuff. I think that it would have been better for Rachel if she had tried to have this conversation off camera instead of immediately looping production in. And the hard thing is that you kind of have to if you want to do it in person at this point. And I'm sure she did want to do it in person. And then they were like, we're filming it, you know. But I feel like you've got two bad choices here. I think it probably would have been better to be like, let's do it over Zoom so that we don't have to get roped into an on-camera.
Right, bring cameras in, because it really understandably had like a real impact on how both of them were acting.
Right.
In that conversation.
That I think he necessarily would have been totally honest, because it sounds like he wasn't being honest already.
No, but I just think inevitably both of them, and that doesn't mean I'm like saying they're like acting or like so plotted or planning, but you're trying to account for the audience, for production, like for all of the ways in which the conversation might be manipulated.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that is ever going to lend itself to like healthy, open, honest communication.
And also I think the way that he was like, is there a way that this works out? And it seemed like there wasn't. I do think that like once you're on camera with your cheating fiance, it's very hard to turn that into a conversation where you're forgiving him, because you're also very conscious of like, I'm being humiliated right now. And what am I going to do? Just be like, it's okay, sweetie. Like maybe in a more private space, that would be realistic. I don't think she has any obligation to give him another chance personally, but like you're setting up a scenario where it's unrealistic for her to guide that conversation towards any sort of reconciliation, even if he handled it well, which he did not. And she does talk too about how like this idea that he like was so brave and came to me to confess because it was the right thing to do is ridiculous, because he didn't. Like he just started saying things that I had to like pull on the thread.
Right.
And then I finally pulled it out. And then immediately he was like, I wish I didn't tell you, don't tell anyone. And that was like his first reaction.
And you're like, oh, that's why she's so angry.
Right.
She's like, I had to force this out from you, and then like you didn't say anything that felt appropriate.
Right. And then she talks about how every time he told her the story about the cheating, the story changed. She's like, first it's a kiss at a party, then it's a kiss in an Uber on the way to her house where his car is parked. Where is the story connecting? Ugh. When you're lying, you can't keep your story straight. I mean, it does seem like if you only kissed at a party, you wouldn't accidentally say that you kissed in an Uber.
And also that there were texts. Like, it like makes so much sense, again, hearing even these little bit of specifics, why she was like, I don't even believe you that this was only a one-time thing. Because it's like, you're so sketchy. Like,
yeah.
None of this was offered
the
freely.
Only way
she says that multiple times, like,
yeah, the only way that this sounds like potentially it was only one kiss is if he thought, well, if I say I kiss someone at a party, it will sound
more casual,
and so I'll just say that, and then the real story came out. Otherwise you're looking at like it happened at least twice.
Right.
I don't know. It's not good.
I could see it only being one time, but like the point is, and I think this is what Rachel drives home, is like, it almost doesn't matter, because the way that he handled this was so concerning to her. She's like, you've already proven that you can't be faithful in a fight or in a hard time. And then that he won't be honest about it. So it's like,
right. I mean, you know, how are you supposed to feel secure in a relationship if like time you're not being your absolute best, most available, perfect partner self, you have to immediately worry that they're going to go find comfort with someone else.
And then
else.
Also that you don't have a basic level of trust that when the person says that didn't happen, like you're always kind of second guessing, and that puts you in a very bad headspace. And something that I think is also important context is that Rachel was like, I'm a pilot and I'm going back to my job. And part of being a pilot is having a lot of trust in a relationship, because you might have a fight and then have to leave for 5 days. She's like, that's literally just built into my career. So like, she can't be with someone who every time there's space, she, or like every time there's a conflict, she has to worry.
Right.
And like no one can be in that relationship, but it's even like built into being a pilot.
Right. Like, and that's hard. I don't know if I could deal with that, like to have a partner on the road that much. That is hard. That brings with it challenges that you need certain relationship skills to navigate. And Tino presented himself as very much having all of those skills.
Right. They did have that conversation.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, I think in their first date, she brought it up multiple times with people she was dating on the show.
Constantly.
She was like, this has been an issue in relationships. Yeah. This is a huge thing for me. Mm-hmm. This career is a big thing for me. Would you be able to handle this? And it's like,
he's like,
it goes back to what we've been talking about the whole season, which is that Tino lives in a delusional state and doesn't have an ability to really be honest about himself,
yeah,
or the situation. And like, that's, he needs to develop those skills to be, frankly, in any healthy relationship, but certainly in a relationship with these built-in challenges.
Yeah.
I
agree. I think if you're Rachel, like, I once you find out that this happened after they really hadn't been together that long. And he would say, like, when they were on after the final rose, like, when it was good, it was so good. At first, it was perfect. And I'm like, well, it was like 2 months. So, like, how little time of a rough patch did you have before you felt like it was acceptable or understandable for you to react this way? Like, that shows such a lack of resilience in how you handle
and
challenges
in a relationship. Also, not even just act out in this way, but then respond to the mistake you made with such poor communication skills, with a lack of forthcomingness and honesty. It's like, that is that like pile on of like bright red flags.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, you did fuck up in this major way and you can't even own it. You can't respond to it. You don't know how to acknowledge it or like share that information.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's, it's just, this relationship's not going
to
work.
Yeah. And she does say, she does go out of her way to be like, this woman did not know Tino was engaged. And
yeah, I appreciate
it's not on her. She's like, he told me that the moment he kissed her, I did tell her I was engaged. And it's like, that's not the best time to tell a woman you've been texting with and kissing that you're engaged, like after you've gotten things physical, buddy. But I appreciate that she pointed that out. And
yeah, I did. Again, this is something I really like about Rachel. It felt like in line with the Aven stuff that she was like, I anticipate the way that certain segments of the audience are going to react. And like, it is part of my responsibility as like a famous person with this platform.
Yeah.
Like, to make sure that everyone knows, like, please don't go after this other person. And I thought that was,
this whole storyline is so important. Weird because, like, I don't want Tino to get like mentally destroyed by Bachelor Nation. I don't think that's healthy.
No,
but
I think we've been very clear about it.
It is also interesting to me how quickly people got very defensive of him and also being like, it was just a kiss and like, blah, 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 whatever. But I do think that like, we have seen people be really hard on like Nate after he and Michelle got engaged based on nothing or like Dumois rumors that he was like seen flirting at a bar, like that he couldn't be trusted. And we have like such clear evidence that Tino could not be trusted. And there are people who want to be like, he's such a nice boy. Like, it was just a kiss. Like, why is she being so hard on him? And I just think that that is also telling of a certain strain of the audience that really wants to believe in its white male heroes and like forgive them and protect them. And that does bother me. Like, we have pilloried,
including after what we saw as, you know, I would say a pattern of behavior of not being able to confront challenges in an honest way on the show,
right? Like, it was so
also
obvious.
You know, like Rachel, right? Like, Rachel addresses also the feeling of seeing, you know, the scene where Tino was like angry at her for canceling the date and like the parts of that that she didn't see, and like sort of, There was this entire body of evidence, basically, by the time this happened. And then his reaction to it clearly played a huge role in her decision. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not to say that things would have been different if he had responded differently or told her right away, but like, maybe it would have.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just he kissed someone else one time. He's a horrible monster who deserves to be like pilloried. Like, that's certainly doesn't seem to be Rachel's position. And I also would just caution people on putting the blame of the show's shitty and like questionably humane, like inhumane actions onto Rachel.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's not appropriate either.
Yeah. And I think we've tried to be clear about that too. But we should move on because we did already litigate this at length. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the new details. But let's have a little interlude to talk about a very micro piece of Bachelor Nation gossip. Tino's dad, Joe, went on a podcast. Joe Franco's pod debut.
Claire did the Lord's work of listening to this pod. I did half of
the Lord's work. I listened to the first half and then I was like, I'm getting really bored and it's time to tape this podcast. So I'm going to stop. But I did listen to the first half of it. He went on the Honestly Unfiltered podcast to share his side of the story. And it was an interesting listen. For the first maybe 20 minutes before it starts to get a little meandering. So he starts out by basically being like, I stand behind what I said and did. That's who I am. It was like misunderstood, basically, because people don't know me. That was kind of the party line. And he explains that he had never watched the show when Tino said that he had been approached to go on it and was interested. But he checked out some old episode descriptions on Hulu and saw that there was travel. And they love travel in his family. So he encouraged Tino to go on the show so he could maybe travel and like go surfing maybe in some cool places. So then I guess he was like pretty aggrieved at hometowns that this whole thing wasn't just free travel and surfing, but like involved a human woman who wanted to date someone and get engaged, which is actually the premise of the show. It's not a free travel and surfing show.
Like, again, fine. Frankly, I think it's fine to go on the show because you're like, maybe I'll see a cool place.
I absolutely do too. But you do have to
have to understand that part of the deal is like, this is a hetero marriage show.
Right.
Do some basic research, just like very basic.
I totally understand being like, my main motivation going on the show is I probably won't get far, but maybe it'll be a cool experience. Absolutely. I think that's so human and normal. But you do have, I think, an obligation to be aware of the premise of the show and how you might play into that and to not act like it's some sort of like random personal attack. That at the end, there's a woman who's like, I thought this was about me getting engaged, because it is about that. That's what she's been told. That's what they've been doing on this show for a long time. So
20 whole years.
And then he's like talking about how hometowns went. And he's like, you know, maybe it's just because my friends love me, but they were all messaging me and being like, any parent would be asking these questions. You didn't do anything wrong. Then he's like, I did notice that other parents didn't ask the same questions. So maybe I just didn't know enough about the show. Maybe, I don't know. I was just concerned for Tino because I know what a genuine person he is. And I thought if he gets caught up in this, for him, it means a lot. If he's going to propose, I think he's going to want to take it all the way. There's a lot to unpack here. First of all,
the problem here was not
the question.
His concern.
Also, like,
nor was it even like his questions to Tino. Like,
nor was it his questions necessarily to, well, it was some of his questions to Rachel, but like other parents were asking those questions. They were just asking them in a less aggressive way.
Asked some pretty clear questions and expressed skepticism. It's like the problem here is delivery. And I would say this to a lot of people in a lot of situations. Sometimes you just need to say, what tone am I taking?
Yeah.
Am I just being a dick right now?
Maybe why am I even asking?
Maybe I could deliver the question in a more sensitive way.
Why am I even asking the question if she gives a really good answer and my response is like, nah, wah, nah, nah. Like, well, then why did you ask if you didn't want an answer? Like, that's the problem.
Also, like, if you're concerned about your son, maybe reserve your harshest comments for a one-on-one conversation with your son and not with Rachel.
He does say, like, I also said those things to Tino. And, like, he was also a bit harsh with Tino. I don't know if he reserved his harshest questions for Tino. But that also kind of concerned
me. That upset me. Yeah, I don't know. My opinion is that you're not going to get your adult children to do the things you want them to do by, like, bullying them into it. Like,
exactly.
That's just not – I don't think that's very effective. You are speaking to two adults, and it's fair to have concerns. And I'm not saying, like, his dad is some horrible monster and he probably should have, like, done some research and
probably
been more thoughtful about – how he was going to come off on a national television show.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Just be like, yeah, I was kind of a dick to Rachel.
That's the thing. I don't think Tino's dad is a monster. Most people are not monsters. He was a dick to Rachel. He was kind of a dick to his son. I think he has the wrong approach to handling these situations as a parent, as the mother of a son is two. I think I'm really qualified to say that. But, like, I do think that he has good qualities. He seemed to have a thick skin, to be able to laugh about it. He seemed pretty good-natured for the most part. And he was able to give a little bit of self-critique, especially because the podcast host was, like, super on his side. And he had to even push back on her and be like, well, you know, maybe my tone was a little harsh for national TV. Like, maybe I did feel bad the day after it aired that maybe I had gone... delivered it too harshly.
Good. And glad to hear that.
So there was some self-reflection, but I did think that there was an element of, like, the Tino self-delusion quality that was like, do you really think that you're different in this setting? Like, most parents are concerned. They just ask the questions differently. Like, if most people watching think that you are being rude and unkind to Rachel, maybe it's because you were. And just because you act like that in your normal life, maybe people just don't tell you that to your face. You know what I mean? And also the idea that, like, Tino is this, like, uniquely sensitive, genuine guy who needed to be protected because he's just so genuine, he'd want to take it all the way and get married if he got engaged. He's the only person in a while that we know has managed to cheat on his bachelorette before the show finished airing. So, like, do not expect me to believe that he is just this, like, uniquely passionate about marriage, genuine guy. It's ridiculous. He's just like
everyone has blind spots about their own kids,
their kids. But I do think what he can't, like, see maybe, and that's just his approach, is that, yeah, when you take that approach, that really bullying, harsh approach toward parenting, what you create in Tino, and we, like, see it happening, is this, like, very fragile, bullheaded, like, reactive determination to just do it and not having the space to kind of think through whether it's the right thing because you don't want to prove your dad right.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting point. I think that's really, really right. I don't know, man. Parenting sounds hard.
It does sound hard. And I'm sure that Tino's dad is in many ways a good dad. This did not change my feeling that he and Tino don't have, like, the ideal dynamic.
Yeah.
But he clearly loves his son and wants to support him. He talks a little bit about what ends up coming out on the finale, but it was taped before the finale. And so they only address it in sort of the roundabout way.
Like, the finale was live, so it's not like he saw.
The rumors were out there. They sort of lightly address the rumors. And he keeps using the term Ross and Rachel situation. And he says that he doesn't go to the finale because he didn't want to be a distraction, which I do think was the right decision.
Yeah, I think that's the correct decision.
But he says basically like, yeah, this is Tino's thing. He's got to answer for what he's done. I think there's a real reasonable explanation.
Well, if there is, he doesn't offer it.
Yeah. Maybe that explanation seems reasonable to his parents because they love him. We stand behind him because he's stepping up and taking responsibility. He's accountable. That's the kind of person he is. I do think that saying there's a real reasonable explanation is at odds with being like, I take full accountability.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I do feel for Tino's parents, like, to watch your kid in this position. Like,
it's really
hard. It's hard to defend what he did, but he's also really going through it. And I think that's a big parenting challenge.
You're watching your kid suffer on a really, on a national scale.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm not going to hold his dad to, like, having the perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know. Response to that.
But. Yeah, I do. I did appreciate that he had, I thought, a pretty chill attitude about how much he was kind of picked apart by people like us who commented on his appearance. He was like, that's, you know, certain things people said did bother him for sure. But he was like, you know, they're going to pick this stuff to put on the show that's good for drama and people are going to talk about it. That's just how it is. And I don't worry too much about it, basically.
You know what? Good. That seems mentally healthy.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
Let's.
I just very briefly wanted to call out another one of Caitlin Bristow's really excellent Instagram stories that she posted after the finale. She says, look, I don't want this to come across as mean. I know Zach is lovely. His family is lovely. She's like, I met them tonight. She's like, I'm always rooting for people to find love and happiness. Great. But nobody asked for him to be the bachelor. I just don't know about this choice. Judging from his interactions with these women last night, it's a no for me, dog.
Yeah.
Same, KB. Same. I think she just expressed it perfectly. Always rooting for people to find love. Think he seems like a nice guy. It's a no for me.
Yeah, I truly don't think anyone was asking for this. And I don't see why we should have to go through it, quite frankly. It doesn't seem fair. And I hope that he takes those opportunities from being Bachelor and gets his dad some non-crypto retirement investments.
I know. I'm really concerned for Zach's dad.
Same. All right, let's finish up with a little teeny tiny
Paradise
season 8 preview. Just a little taste. It's hard for me to watch the trailers because they're so chaotic, and I get sensory overload.
I really tried to really pause.
You're a hero.
Frame by frame. I spent way too long doing this and still probably gleaned like almost nothing that's that useful. And yet here we are.
You do better than me. You will always be the person who's like, I can't believe people didn't notice this in the trailer. And I'm like, girl, I didn't notice anything in that trailer.
I think I've trained myself to just be like, what doesn't match up? But, you know, look, half the time I just let it wash over.
No, you're really good at that.
Pay attention.
It's an important skill that you bring to the pod, and I love it. So let's start by talking about who will be on the beach that we know of. We never know the full cast in advance, but between a combination of some, like, spoilers and things people we've seen in teasers
and
the
also
official
just they spoil
release.
Themselves in so many ways in the promos because
well,
there's
exactly.
just, like, less concern.
Yeah. So I tried to organize these by season, roughly chronologically. So from Ben Higgins' season and Bachelor in Paradise 3, she is a throwback. It's Lace Morris.
I'm very concerned.
Got engaged to Grant on season 3 of BIP, and they got matching tattoos. Yeah, that didn't end well.
Oh my God, I do hope she gets another tattoo. Like, we have not, it's been a while since someone got an ill-advised on-screen tattoo.
If she another BIP tattoo, I think that I would begin to worry that they should not have had her back. Like, that's when you start to be like.
I already worry.
I mean, I would worry that she should have failed like some screenings. So hopefully, I guess I hope that won't happen, but it would be exciting. From Matt's season, Brittany Galvin, who's one of the girls who came in a little late in the season and then had
she was also the subject of Anna Redmond's weird sex worker
rumor
allegation. Yeah. And yeah, it was a mess, but I'm actually excited for Brittany
to
we'll get to know her.
I have been totally understanding if she never wanted to come back on the show, but part of me did want her to get another shot at this, to have a plot line other than that. Katie's season, we have Andrew S., Justin, Michael, Aaron, and James back in action.
Good. I mean, like, good crop.
They just took the all-stars.
I can't say I'm that excited for Aaron and James, but I guess Aaron is great for drama. I am very excited to see Andrew and Justin and Michael.
I'm a little annoyed.
I really like all three
of
them.
I wish that, I know Michael didn't want to do Bachelor. I wish that they had taken Justin and Andrew for Bachelor, but it is what it is. I am excited to see them again. From Michelle's season, we have Casey, Brandon, and Romeo. As we know, Casey won't be there long because he apparently like shatters his ankle.
Yeah, which look, they did really milk that with the ambulance shots and the promos.
It's funny because we all know what happened because he was back on Instagram with like a giant cast.
Yeah, like he was very injured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
am interested. Brandon seems like he'll be like a big romantic hero, which I love.
Another person they could have saved for Bachelorette IMO, but no one asked me.
I know. He really would have been I think he would have been a fantastic bachelor.
If they're going to cast a young, earnest guy who just wants to find love, please cast Brandon and not Zach.
He has personality. I'm disappointed, but I do think he's going to like really thrive on Paradise. Yeah. Also excited to see our bud Romeo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who didn't really
get a lot. Emma's bud Romeo. I never meet anyone because I live in Jersey City and I can't leave the house after 5.
I did meet Romeo through Charlene, and he is it seems like he's gonna be involved in some drama. I have already warned him that I will be dunking on him
ruthlessly
if and when he deserves it.
Just a little bit of Ruth for our friends.
Yeah.
Clayton's season, we have Haley, who I was so touched to see that her intense social media campaign to still be on Paradise, even though she was a night one girl, really paid off.
You know what? I love to see some night one people just getting that second chance.
She was bootstrapping. She was out here making TikToks, making reels, being like, oh, it's just me, the girl who was on The Bachelor. And it worked. And I respect the hustle. Teddy, of course, Clayton's like early front runner that things just sort of fell apart with, but she's
pretty excited for Teddy.
So cute. Serene, Shanae.
Another fave.
Shanae
is clearly going to be a big part of this season.
Yeah, obviously they had to bring back Shanae and Genevieve so they can fight again.
I believe Elizabeth said she declined.
Yeah.
Which, fair enough.
Jill, Sierra, Kira, and Hunter are all joining the cast.
Oh, and Kate Gallivan.
Oh, nice. I missed that. This is why Emma should put together these docs.
She's a later arrival, but I saw her in multiple trailers.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah, because you were scouring those. Mm-hmm. Kira's going to be interesting. Kira already on The Bachelor came off as almost too poised and professional to be on The Bachelor. And Bip is so messy. And whenever I see her in a trailer, I'm just like, what is she doing there?
You're like, this doesn't fit.
Like, you should be like wearing a suit in a hospital. She's a physician. She just like really seems like she has her shit together. I'm like, why?
I know. Like, girl, save yourself.
From Gachel's season, of course, Logan taking his lady switching talents to the beach.
Oh God.
It's where he should be.
He makes out with literally everyone.
It's what he does.
And also cries. It's like he's perfect. He was made for Paradise.
He must have been like watching the reaction to him switching from Rachel to Gavin, being like, oh my God. And then I did all that shit on Beth. So that's going to be a lot. Jacob, who I just don't really care for.
And he will, he does seem, they're trying to frame him like the Kenny. Like he, I saw in a trailer that he like arrives naked. I'm like, but.
Well, I didn't like it. Listen, I didn't like it when Kenny did it either. I'm not even going to be like, it was good when Kenny did it. I didn't like
it. No, it was bad when Kenny did it. But I think just like Kenny had more redeeming qualities than Jacob. So like.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Maybe he'll do a face turn this season. Yeah. Johnny, of course, as we all know, went right from being dumped to the beach. Hayden, Joey, and Justin, the twins.
Like, we didn't need Hayden to be there at all.
They just love getting a villain back. It just makes me so mad that they got him on this, but they didn't get him on the Mentel All. I wanted him on Mentel All. I don't want him here.
Right. It feels really weird that he was not forced to answer for the shit, but they did cast him.
It is sort of funny, though, that we're always like, mental health, don't trap contestants and make them answer to things.
And then we're like,
they should have frog marched Hayden onto that stage.
I mean, look, there's a way to do it.
I think that if they wanted him on Paradise, they should have made it contingent on Mentel All.
Yeah.
I would be fine with him not doing Paradise and him never being on the
exactly,
show.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if he can't, and if he feels he can't handle answering to things on Mentel All, I don't want them to coerce that. But he should have answered.
But then
for
just
it.
Like simply don't show up on
like an adult
Paradise. I will say from the trailers, he doesn't seem to be a major player at all.
Who
so we can,
would
know, all
want
take comfort
him
in that?
Is my question. Except for his ex, who now knows that she is more desirable than both bachelorettes. And maybe that won her
oh
over.
God.
Who makes out from what Emma could see in these trailers? It's a lot of people.
It's chaotic. It's very chaotic. A lot of people making out, obviously. This isn't to say that any of them had more than like one date. As we know, there's a lot of making out and most of it goes nowhere. But here's what I could see. Teddy and Andrew, which I think people were predicting. They both had expressed interest. They definitely make out. Jacob and a blonde, which like frankly I couldn't tell.
I'm pretty sure I saw Jacob and Shanae together at some point.
But I also think I saw Jacob and Kate.
Maybe it's both of them then. I definitely saw him with Shanae.
Okay. Well, in this particular shot, I couldn't tell if he was making out with Kate or Shanae, but he'll probably make out with both. We also see Jacob and Jill together. Johnny and Victoria.
Jill don't.
I know. Jill deserves better. I am interested. I think it's telling when you only see someone like making out with one person.
Oh, you only
and in the trailers,
saw.
I only saw Johnny and Victoria with each other, I believe. And like same actually for Serena and Brandon, I think. So I would say those two are couples to watch. Also saw Logan and Shanae. Like Shanae is definitely getting out there.
Logan's like
getting out
a lot
there.
Of Shanae
definitely
on this.
Getting out there. Yeah. Yeah, I saw Shanae on a date with Olu, but did not see them making out. So
oh, Olu's going to be there.
A kiss.
I didn't
yes,
have Olu
Olu's
on gonna the
be
list.
There. I didn't. Right. I forgot to add him. Love Olu. So excited by that. Aaron and Genevieve are going to make out. James and Shanae are going to make out. Logan and Sarah. Oh, Sarah Emmerich also.
Oh,
was
Sarah.
Not on our,
from
our
Clayton
list.
Season. we're yes, editing in real and, time.
And also NC.
And NC, yeah. Sarah and NC as well.
Yeah.
Oh, and Eliza.
Yeah, Logan and Sarah
oh my gosh.
And Eliza.
It's like everyone from Clayton's season.
Yes. Well, it's the latest one. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, Tyler and Shanae made out.
Okay.
Shanae, I mean, you know, Tyler and Shanae. Yeah, Serena and Brandon, as I said. Justin and Eliza.
But also
Rodney and Eliza.
Interesting.
Logan and Kate Gallivan, Andrew and NC. Andrew and someone that I believe was Brittany Galvin. It was a little hard to tell, but I'm pretty sure it was Brittany.
Oh my gosh. A lot of action, a lot of mouth action.
I also was trying to kind of right in other observations I made from the trailer. It's clear that though we know Jill has some sort of relationship with Jacob, she and Romeo get in a fight.
Interesting.
So maybe there was some sort of romantic tension there. Eliza seems to imply that she goes through two breakups in one day. She says she's gotten her heart broken twice in one day. Aww. So I'm worried because
people say that they got their heart broken.
And then it means nothing. You don't know.
Sometimes it doesn't mean they got dumped or whatever. Sometimes it just means that, like, they found out something that upset them.
Right. They had a hard conversation.
Right. And then it's, like, fine the next day. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hopeful Eliza finds some happiness. I like Eliza.
Yeah. Me too. A big thing that is teased is that there's, like, a big twist halfway through the season. It seems like the women who were there all have to leave at once, and new women are brought in to date the men. This seems similar to something that I think happens on Love Island called Casa Amor, where they will like split established couples up and bring in new people and like sort of test the relationships.
Yeah.
But something that seemed fucked up about this to me is like, I didn't see any evidence that the women who had to leave were then like given new men to test out their relationship.
It seems like they just get moved to a hotel.
Yeah, they just get moved away and they're like emotionally tortured and like
not
everyone's
a fan.
Crying.
I truly wonder if that was inspired by the forced evacuation last year and the fact that some like drama happened as a result of them all being in the hotel for a day, a night or two. And if they were like, what if we like engineered an evacuation? And
they're like,
and
what if it's an evacuation and Casa Amor mashup?
Right. I feel like that was probably, they love to take these emergency moments and iterate on them.
But I will say, I support any property in the Bachelor franchise being willing to experiment with form and twists, and I'm not sure if I'll like this one, but
Also, I think that they need to understand that what I want from Bachelor in Paradise is for everyone to immediately meet the perfect person for them and just hang out on the beach for a few weeks, making out. Like, whenever someone comes in and a couple breaks up, I just feel sick.
Yeah, I know.
I want there to be no drama.
We're weak. We just want love.
Yeah, So it seems like there is a lot of new stuff that's going to happen, and I'm just hoping that the women also get their new men moment.
I will say Rodney and Lace seem to be an early couple, because when Jesse comes in to do the twist, Rodney and Lace are sitting right next to each other, seems sort of like coupled, and Jill and Jacob too, and like the women look stricken.
Yeah.
So, and then it looks like Eliza maybe comes in at that twist.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Also, the only drama we see from Brandon, this really made me love him, is that he's crying to someone who it seems like Serene, because he doesn't want to keep watching his friends go through this pain, whatever he's referring to. I was like, oh,
sweet Brandon.
Brandon, I love you. Our empathetic king.
Yeah, so we foresee a lot of mess. I'm very excited right now. I know that like by week three, I'm going to be like, I hate this franchise. Get me out of here. Because that's how it always seems to go.
We always enter with such enthusiasm.
But Paradise typically is the most fun and least traumatizing to me as a recapper. I don't know how it feels for the contestants, but for me, it feels the least traumatizing.
But this is about us.
And
so
I can only speak to my own experience. I know that every element of the franchise can definitely inflict a lot of trauma and pain on the contestants. So I don't want to take away from that. But I'm hoping that it will be a fun watch and that we can have just a fun summery fall. Just a little beach, fall beach play.
Exactly.
Yeah, something to look forward to. It starts super soon, just a few days. No break, no rest.
Yeah, we will see you back here soon to see if any of our predictions or any of the stills that I examined on these promos, if I had the correct reading of them. I'm sure I was fooled like 12 times.
Give yourself more credit.
Thank you, Claire. I appreciate that. on that note, that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Tamika Weatherspoon. Our theme music is by Tamar Habib, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like our show, please follow us wherever you get your podcasts and rate us 5 stars and leave a review. And of course, tell all your friends about our show. It really helps new people find us.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com with your questions and voice memos.
You can also find us on Twitter and TikTok at Love to See It Pod and Instagram at clareandemmapod. And you can find our newsletter, Rich Text, on Substack at clareandemma.substack.com.
I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose. We'll be back next week for Paradise. Can you keep up?
I like love it. Stitcher.
Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.